Good afternoon and welcome to The Lunchroom, live on Radio Caribbean International, and I'm your host, Calix George Jr. It's Wednesday midweek, and it's November the 6th, day number 310 of the year 2019. We're on to show number 171, and on the menu today in The Lunchroom, we'll be discussing the offshore financial sector as St. Lucia hosts the annual Caribbean Regional Compliance Association conference, and we have two guests in studio today to have that conversation. And of course, at The Lunchroom, we always aim to bring you food for thought, and we seek to deliver that as part of our mandate for public enlightenment. And you can help us set that menu with your calls, your questions, and your comments as well. And our Lunchroom number here is 452-3046, 452-3046, as well as our WhatsApp number 724-0008. And you can follow us online at our website, rcistlucia.com, as well as streaming live on Facebook, the official page of Radio Caribbean International. And of course, please like and share that as well with your friends. And if you are still famished, check out our De La Cuisine participants, Hardest Hard Restaurant and Bar, Eugenie's Delight, KFC, Bozen's, and Massey Store's New Dock Road. And a few birthday wishes for November the 6th, going out to former principal of St. Mary's College, Mr. Rowan Sehorn. And it's also the birthday of another former classmate of mine, and he is Officer Severius Mathre of the Royal St. Lucia Police Force. Happy birthday to Mr. Miguel Trim as well, another Sumerian there. Also, happy birthday to Mr. Ken Howell, to Mr. George Gallion over in New York, Miss Kerry Ann Taylor, Miss Chanel Senville, Mr. Craig Prescott, Miss Kim Winter, Mr. Clement Prosper, and Miss Ashley George. And wish you all a very best on your birthday, and lots of birthday wishes today indeed. And a bit of history for November the 6th. Mahatma Gandhi was arrested in 1913, and that was for leading an Indian miners' march in South Africa. In 1917, the Bolshevik Revolution began, and that began in what is Petrograd, or and that began with the bombardment of the Winter Palace there. And in 1947, the U.S.'s longest-running TV show, NBC's Meet the Press, debuts. And now we're on to our dish of the day. The Daily Dish is brought to you the kind compliments of Tiles Plus. Plus. Come get your tiles. We have tiles. Plus. We have tiles for inside and outside. Bathroom, kitchen with the best price. We range from colors to size. So anytime you want tile, come down and get tile. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a Christmas. All kind of tiles, cause we are the boss. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a crisscross. All kind of tiles, cause we are the boss. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bossejoux Groselay, and Clark Street in J4. Telephone number 453-7939. That's telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
Serving now, The Daily Dish.
And thanks for listening to us here at The Lunchroom. And, of course, you heard in the regional news, Guyana projected to have economic growth in the region of 80% in the upcoming year, in 2020. It's certainly going to be a boom town, Georgetown. And certainly good news for Guyana, which has had quite a rough number of decades since the days of Burnham. And they have not been able to fully recover since that period. As you know, the Guyanese economy has suffered from a very low currency rate for quite some time. And even though this country is absolutely wealthy as it pertains to land, forest resources, mineral resources, bauxite, diamonds, gold, it has certainly suffered from a bit of an infrastructural deficit for quite a number of years. There isn't even really a paved road from Georgetown down into Roraima, in the Brazilian state there. So a lot of work has to be done to build up that economy, no doubt. But they're going to have a major windfall thanks to hydrocarbons, thanks to the discovery of oil, and the indication there that for every Guyanese, in fact, they would be the wealthiest in the world when it comes to their per capita oil reserves. Certainly, they don't have the largest reserves in the world. That's still the purview of Saudi Arabia and then Venezuela and Canada. But in terms of the population per person, they're going to have some of the largest reserves per person. They will have the largest reserves per person. And in fact, they're still discovering more oil. It's going to be a very difficult time to manage. As you know, there's only an interim government in place until March, when they'll be having elections next year. And so it'll be very, very interesting to see how things are maintained. Of course, when economies experience such windfalls, such booms, the rest of the economy tends to suffer. And they go through something called Dutch disease. And effectively, the prices of every go up as a result of this one sector. So prices of real estate and prices of goods and commodities will go up for everybody, even though not everybody would be within that economic sector. So it's going to be very difficult to manage, even though we see it as a great boost and boom for them. It'll also be very interesting to see how it pans out over the coming years in terms of Guyana and its relations with the rest of CARICOM. Since the difficult times that Guyana has had over the years, you've seen quite a bit of emigration to other parts of the Caribbean. And we must say as well that in quite often, Guyanese have not been treated with the necessary respect in some Caribbean countries. So now they will certainly be the king of the hill in the Caribbean, it appears. And it'll be very interesting to see how that pans out. Of course, politics will matter quite a bit. And it is a very multicultural country, Guyana, and that has caused some consternation and riots in the past. So certainly it has to be very, very well managed. And we'll see how things pan out with CARICOM and the relations there. Of course, elections as well announced in Dominica, December the 6th. Some of you may have seen Mr. Roosevelt Skerrett with his bell and his pointy pink shoes last night going on stage to announce that date. So we'll be, of course, trying to give a balanced report as to how that pans out in the coming days, trying to get some interviews on both sides, on the UWP and the DLP over there. But enough for our dish of the day. When we come back, we'll be discussing compliance and the offshore industry in the Caribbean.
This has been The Daily Dish.
We have tiles for inside and outside. Bathroom, kitchen with the best price. We range from colors to size. So anytime you want tile, come down and get tile. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a crisscross. All kind of tiles, cause we are the boss. Everybody welcome to Tiles Plus. Come get your tiles with the low cost. Tiles with the style like a crisscross. All kind of tiles, cause we are the boss. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosse Jougros Delay, and Clark Street in J4. Telephone number 453-7939. That's telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
And welcome back to The Lunchroom. And I'm very pleased to have in studio with me two guests, and they are here in St. Lucia for the 13th annual conference, the Caribbean Regional Compliance Association. In fact, they'll be having their conference over the next 2 days up at Royalton Resort at Cap Estate Groseley. And in studio with me is the CRCA conference chair, Mr. Marlon Marquis. Marlon works over in the British Virgin Islands, but he's back home in St. Lucia for a few days for this conference, as well as another director, Mrs. Sandra Wattler, from the Cayman Islands, but originally from Jamaica, I do believe. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us here on this Wednesday to discuss compliance, something that I don't think very many people understand very well across the world. But Marlon, from my understanding, this is the first time that this conference is going to be held in St. Lucia. Is that correct?
Good afternoon, Calix, and good afternoon to your listening audience. Thank you very much for having us on your program this afternoon. In terms of your question, yes, this is the first time the CRCA is hosting the conference here in St. Lucia, and we are excited about it. We are excited about the Royalton Resort as well, which has been quite lovely and very hospitable. And our guests and delegates who are coming in, those who have arrived here over the weekend and last night as well, they couldn't stop raving about St. Lucia. So we are happy that we are here, and we are excited to host the conference from tomorrow.
Definitely. Now, you're a St. Lucia national, St. Lucian by birth, but you've worked in the financial sector over in the BVI. That's my understanding. Maybe I've gotten the facts right or wrong, but which is, of course, a very well-known offshore financial jurisdiction. For the benefit of some young people out there who may be interested in that sector and getting involved, tell us about a little bit about your own journey getting into that industry.
I had a very interesting journey, and you are correct. I was born and raised in St. Lucia. I've been in the BVI for approaching 20 years now. So I call BVI home. I call St. Lucia home. It's just the same. So you could you'll be correct to say I have two homes. In terms of getting into compliance, my journey started with just having that drive, that ambition to be in a position that is, it allows me to bring about some changes as well as to provide very good service to my employer as well as clients. And in 2008, in the BVI, we enacted a new AML, which is anti-money laundering regime. And I saw an opportunity to capitalize on this, at the time, very young profession. And I took advantage of it. And I did a few certifications with the London-based International Compliance Association, which provides certification that is very relevant to the Caribbean. And from there, I continued to expose myself and to take advantage of all opportunities presented to me. Just to give you a little idea as to what I do on a day-to-day basis and what compliance involves. At the widest, it is compliance with all legislations that the regulated entity, my employer, is exposed to. So that includes not just anti-money laundering legislation, but also, for example, submitting audited financial statements after the end of the financial year. I must ensure that that is done within the prescribed time. Also, in terms of labor laws, sexual harassment, things of that nature, everything that my employer is exposed to, I must ensure that they comply. So that's one section of my duties. The other is that I must ensure that the clients comply with all legislations that are applicable to their, to whatever service and products that they want. So it's twofold. And then I answer to my board of directors, and I answer to the Financial Services Commission, which is the regulator that regulates financial services. So it's a very stressful position, but very fulfilling. New challenges on a daily basis as well.
And in a way, you have to be the bad guy within the firm. You're the person who is the whip, so to speak. You're the one who needs to make sure that everybody is actually doing what they're supposed to be doing in a timely manner as prescribed by law.
In the early days of compliance, I was viewed as the bad guy. Compliance officers were viewed as, you know, the person who nobody wants to be friendly with. Now, in the BVI, and I'm sure my colleague will confirm in Cayman as well, compliance officers are not viewed that way anymore. We are viewed as an asset, thankfully, and persons view us as ensuring that the company does what it's supposed to be doing and that it continues to be a going concern and that they continue to get paid, whether it's on a fortnightly or on a monthly basis. So we are now the good guys, thankfully.
Is that how it is seen over in the Cayman Islands
Definitely. Right
now, Sandra, you think?
Definitely. Yeah. It is certainly a collaboration between the business and compliance. And as Marlon said, we were seen as to one side, oh, they're the compliance people. You know, nobody ever wanted to talk to us. But as a colleague of mine said, if you look at our company, you look at their AML, their compliance regime, you're seeing the soul of the company. You know, it goes into ethics. It goes into so much more. We started out just dealing with drug trafficking and making sure that bad money did not come into the business, into the jurisdiction. And we've expanded and it keeps going more and more. Now we look at corruption. We look at proliferation, financing of terrorism. So it's so many things that we encompass. And at the end of the day, it's all about your reputation. And so you could do business but lose your reputation and have no business. So it certainly has seen a shift, and now it is a viable profession to go into. So when I started, there was no such thing. I started out doing law, went to work with the regulator, got, you know, these laws to read. And in 2008, when Marlon talked about in BVI and the laws that were changed, they were changed as a result of the CFATF, which is the Caribbean Financial Action Task Force, coming into BVI to review their laws, of which I was a legal expert going into BVI to do. And it was based on the outcome of that, that there were a lot of changes made. Same thing in Cayman in 2007, and now we're going through our fourth round of evaluation. So Cayman has just completed theirs, and I think St. Lucia is now currently going through that assessment, where there are people from the Caribbean coming in to look at various parts of the legislation and also enforcement. This also means looking at customs and immigration as well, looking at your postal laws to see how money passes through. So it's a very interesting, to me, dynamic field that we're in.
And you're coming from the public sector perspective of it.
Correct.
But you are actually in the private sector, Marlon, is that my understanding?
You are correct. Yeah. She was at the time.
Ah, you were.
She's now on the private side.
I've now gone to the dark side.
So you now have to be managed, essentially.
Yeah.
And I suppose that tends to be, is there a difficulty, especially for the public sector, to be able to maintain good human resources, especially when a lot of these financial companies have quite a lot of inducement and incentive for persons to move across?
It is, and it is a problem worldwide. And so one of the things we see coming out of all the reports, regardless of the jurisdiction, is you need to beef up your resources. And of course, nobody goes to school to learn about compliance. And as president of the Cayman Islands Compliance Association, that is one of the areas that I go to the high schools and speak to them. They're the career fairs. And of course, the children close their eyes and walk past, right? Nobody wants to do this. And I'm like, it's sort of like, you know, the investigative arm. It's like NCSI or whatever it is, you know, those things that seem glamorous to people these days. I'm like, that's what you're doing, but just in a different way.
What would you recommend, and I'm glad that you brought up this whole issue of going into the schools, but for persons who actually want to get involved in the sector, what would you recommend in terms of career paths? What should they go through, the auditing perspective, legal, accounting? What would you think would be a good mix?
What is interesting is any of those are good, because with an accounting or auditing background, you're able to analyze certain information. With a legal background, you're looking at it, making sure the compliance with the laws. So I think what you find in the compliance industry, it's not that we're working crosshairs, we're working together. And so there's a lot of collaboration, which is why we're keen on establishing associations. So for instance, in Cayman, our association is strong, same in BVI. But I can pick up the phone and call Marlon. I said, this is what we're facing in Cayman. What are you facing there? And I think making sure we have that cohesive factor really helps, because each person's bringing in a different expertise, so we're looking at differently to capture everything.
Right. Now, you actually just mentioned a topic which we did want to come on, and that's the Caribbean Financial Action Task Force actually reviewing St. Lucia's regulations. That's going on now. I think may have just been completed. What are they looking at, really? What are some of the areas they would be really looking at in terms of a compliance again?
Yeah, well, this is the fourth round of mutual evaluation. At this time, they are testing the effectiveness of legislations, because most Caribbean islands have already, over the past 10 years, approximately 10 years, mm-hmm. enacted all the necessary legislations. So at the moment, the test is how effective.
Now, this is necessary for whom exactly? What organizations are setting the bar, so to speak, out there? Because I mean, we've heard a lot about, for instance, the OECD, mm-hmm. Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, blacklisting certain countries. Are you trying to meet their requirements? Whose requirements are you really trying to meet?
Well, these are global requirements. The Financial Action Task Force, which is the FATF, sets the standards. And the CFATF, which is a regional-styled FATF body, ensures that the standards that are set are being met in the region. And there are similar FATF-style bodies around the world doing similar reviews, publishing similar reports, and ensuring that each jurisdiction within their reach are actually enacting legislations and ensuring that it is effective and meeting all the requirements.
Sure. Now, so, Calix, and just on to that point, there are 40 recommendations. It's broken out into kind of four sectors that they look mm-hmm. at. So, one, they're looking at your laws. Two, they're going to be looking at, when they're doing that, looking at your public sector. looking then also at the private sector. So it means your banks, insurance companies, they're going to be people they're asking to review and look at. They're also going to look at sanctions, what you put in place, what enforceable measures you have if you're not compliant with your domestic legislation. How do you impose those on your people? So that is what is being done globally. And as Marlon said, what they found was happening after the third round, that people put the laws in place, but are you effective? Are you really carrying out these laws? And so now we find the bar much higher for us to try and attain. And so what's happened, very few Caribbean countries have gone through this round. So Bahamas has gone through it, and they've gone into a follow-up process. Cayman has just gone through it, and we're now in the process of a year follow-up. And I think Bermuda's just come out looking really good in this. So it is really something we have to look at as a region, because what's happening is they are looking at us as a region, not as a Cayman versus a St. Lucia. You know, it's the Caribbean that has this problem. So that's why we feel the cooperation is key.
And is this a transparent process? Are those reports available for everybody, or are they just given to the governments or the respective institutions who may have to act?
Sorry, Sandra. It's very transparent. And the reports, the final reports, are published on the CFATF website and made available to whoever can access the website. It's open to everyone. And it makes for interesting reading. Persons like us with law degrees, we tend to take pleasure in reading those things. But it would be interesting as well for you, and you could share it with the listening audience, because it impacts everyone's life. If you have a terrible report and you go through secondary reviews and you are actually blacklisted, it affects the entire jurisdiction. Your economy will suffer, because it will affect foreign direct investment and money flows flowing in and out of the jurisdiction. So it is interesting for you to share that with
you. Now, we're going to definitely get into some of the topics that you're going to have being discussed in this conference in the coming days. But one of them that's clearly very topical, especially in the Eastern Caribbean, is the whole issue of citizenship by investment, CIP, as it's known here in St. Lucia. Is that a concern? Is that placed a certain level of additional concern for compliance officers in the region?
I will leave that for Marlon, but what I want to say about that is that's the beauty of the conference we do. There are a lot of compliance conferences globally, and you know, there's some in the US that a lot of people go to, but the fact that we're in the Caribbean, these are the kinds of topics we touch on. And so it's something we've seen repeatedly brought up as items that, you know, push points that people want to hear about. So we do discuss that because, as you mentioned, transparency is key. And ever since the whole collapse in 2007, 2008 in the financial industry, the investors are now the ones saying, but we want to see that. We don't want to go to a country that's on the blacklist, even if it means lighter regulation. We want to ensure, you know, these things are taking place. So we've actually seen a shift and seeing it embraced by the people who are investing the money. And so therefore investment managers, the banks, everybody then is coming on board, seeing how important reputation is and to follow these standards.
You want to have a crack at
Did you realize
the CIP
how she left
question?
The question?
I know. She left you to pick up do the heavy lifting.
Yes, indeed. Regarding citizenship by investment, I think it was earlier this year or late last year, the European Union published a report on the citizenship by investment programs, touching on those of the Caribbean region. And they frowned upon it. I don't think it's my place to say whether they were correct or incorrect. But as compliance officers, it really does not matter to us, because we will still go through our background checks, our due diligence, irrespective of whether the person attained citizenship through such a program. If I am to share a little experience with you, I have seen the development of the program from St. Kitts. Previously, St. Kitts would issue passports to such persons, and it did not include place of birth. And as a compliance officer, having seen such a passport, it sort of raised a red flag. But over the past few years, they made changes where they are now including place of birth on such passports. So I think the region as a whole, not just in terms of citizenship by investment, but the region as a whole, whenever it comes to making changes to improve and to comply with international standards, they are very keen to do that.
It also seems, though, that your entire sector, especially in terms of, I mean, you work in the private sector, both of you right now, you're very well regulated. There are a lot of laws, there are a lot of regulations, there are a lot of standards that you're going to meet. But it seems sometimes that the public sector itself is not as well regulated as it should be, even though they are supposed to be the ones watching over. A bit of a contradiction sometimes. Do you have a lot of membership coming from the public sector agencies, like directors of audit, those types of agencies at all?
Well, it's interesting. From my perspective in Cayman, where the public sector, you know, they don't join our association. We need that clear divide. Mm-hmm. But you're right. They're so busy regulating everything. But it's also the outlying other government ministries. So, for instance, the judiciary. Have you had your AML training? You know, members of we call them members of Legislative Assembly, you know, members of Parliament. Have they had AML training? And it wasn't until the CFATF came in, you realize, okay, we need to ensure all of these things are done. Have the lawyers had their training? Have the accountants? They may not fall within traditional regulated financial services industry, but they are a part of that. Your jewelers, you know, precious metals dealers. So all of these things, they do form a part. You don't realize the significance of it until a review like this comes in. So I think a lot of times you're just caught up in your day-to-day activities and figuring, this really has nothing to do with me.
All right. Now, St. Lucia has been involved in international financial services, I think, for maybe about 20 years now or thereabouts. And from what I'm seeing from your own website, there are about 9 regional compliance associations. So you have Antigua and Barbuda, Bahamas, Barbados, Bermuda, BVI, Cayman, Curacao, Trinidad and Tobago, Turks and Caicos. No association yet in St. Lucia. I take it this is one of the reasons why you're here in St. Lucia on a mission to perhaps, in fact, form an association?
You are very correct about that, Calix. We are assisting a steering committee here in St. Lucia to form a compliance association. And this association will, once it is off the ground, it will give compliance officers unity in voicing their concerns, as well as influencing certain policies and procedures that will only be beneficial to St. Lucia as well as their profession.
Right.
And I must add, Anguilla joined us earlier this year.
Oh, Anguilla is also another. Okay, I see. Wonderful. So we have 10 associations across the region, and hopefully St. Lucia will be coming on very, very soon.
Now,
we're going to have to take a break at this point in time for our weather news. When we come back after that, we'll hopefully maybe even open the lines up to that and take some questions in from the public who may have lots to ask as well.
Fritas! Fritas! Come and get your fritas, yeah! We're giving them away at Island Style. Tell them that!
So are you mad? What do you mean, fritas?
Well, madam, for every 100 tiles you buy at our regular price at Island Style, we'll give you up to an amazing 25 tiles free!
Really?
And to be honest, yeah, we've probably gone a little mad.
Wow! That's a deal! And good timing, too! So I can pretty up my house in time for Christmas! And look how nice those tiles are!
Fritas! Fritas! Ceramic tiles! Porcelain tiles! All tiles! No exception! Visit us at Bella Rosa, Rodney Bay, John Crompton Highway, Castries, and Latoni, View 4, or call 452-450 or 453 tiles!
Attention, attention, attention. Introducing Palmer Automotive Batteries, a leading brand in Asia, now in St. Lucia. Palmer Automotive Batteries are now available at Battery World Plus, Rodney Bay and Massad, Shamari's Garage, Blair's Auto and other leading store outlets. Palmer batteries are of the highest quality and standard with full warranty. Palmer is powered by cutting-edge technology and the leader of the new era. Palmer brand, the best priced batteries on the market. Call us today, 453-7037, 451-2264-4450-0390.
Caribbean Metals Limited presents Spin to Win promotion. Spend $500 or more and get a chance to spin to win instant prizes. Spend $2,500 or more and get a chance to spin and enter into the grand prize draw. We have not forgotten our account holders. Pay on your account and get the same chance to win. Promotion runs the first week every month until December. The grand prize, $5,000 cash, on December 6, 2019. Like, share, and subscribe subscribe to our pages on the various social platforms for more details. Terms and conditions apply. This promotion is approved by the National Lotteries Authority. Caribbean Metals, we've got you covered. Guaranteed.
Get 5 weeks free when you buy home or contents insurance from Beacon. Our insurance is very affordable, and we've got online and mobile services for your convenience. Call us at 458-5860 or log on to beacon.co.tt for a quote today.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
Let us now take a look at the latest weather report as of 12 noon today. It's the 6th of November, 2019. Our forecast of this hour, McLean Jabaptiste. The present weather at Huronera, partly cloudy with showers nearby. And at George Charles, it's cloudy with showers nearby. Present temperature at Huronera, 31 degrees Celsius or 88 degrees Fahrenheit. And last night's minimum temperature at Huronera was 26 degrees Celsius or 79 degrees Fahrenheit. The wind at Huronera blowing from the east at 23 miles per hour or 37 kilometers. And after a 24-hour period ended at 8 a.m., there was 1.9 millimeters of rainfall recorded at Huronera and 3.9 millimeters was recorded at George Charles. The total rainfall for the month of November thus far, 33.5 millimeters at Huronera and 19 millimeters at George Charles. Sun will set today 26 minutes before 6, and the sun will rise in the morning at 6. The forecast for St. Lucia valid for the next 24 hours. The winds blowing between the east and the east-southeast near 21 miles per hour or 33 kilometers with occasional gust. And the weather, partly cloudy to cloudy and hazy with a few scattered showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms. A recap of the forecast for St. Lucia valid for the next 24 hours. The winds blowing between the east and the east-southeast near 21 miles per hour or 33 kilometers with occasional gust. And the weather, partly cloudy to cloudy and hazy with a few scattered showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms. The marine forecast for seas in a 25-mile or 40-kilometer radius from St. Lucia. Presently, we are experiencing high tide at the Castries Harbour. Low tide will be at 18 minutes before 6 this evening. Also presently experiencing high tide at the VFO Bay, and the low tide will be at 9 minutes after 7 tonight. The seas are locally rough. The waves and northeasterly swells are 6 to 9 feet. That is the same as 1.8 to 2.7 meters in open waters. Small craft operators and seabeaters, you are advised to exercise caution due to brisk winds and rough seas. Please be guided accordingly. For the Lesser Antilles, over the Windward Islands, it will be partly cloudy to cloudy with some scattered showers and the chance of thunderstorms. Over the rest of the region, it will be generally fair, occasionally becoming cloudy with a few scattered showers. So again, for the Lesser Antilles, over the Windward Islands, it will be partly cloudy to cloudy with some scattered showers and a chance of thunderstorms. And over the rest of the region, it will be generally fair, occasionally becoming cloudy with a few scattered showers. The Tropical Weather Outlook. A tropical wave will continue to cause some showery periods and possibly thunderstorms over the Windward Islands today. And two other tropical waves located over the central tropical Atlantic and near the west coast of Africa, moving westward near 12 miles per hour or 15 kilometers or 19 miles per hour or 24 kilometers respectively. So please take note. That's what our weather report looks like for now. Join us again in the morning at around 6:30. Our next official report from the Met Service is due on this station. Thank you, McLean, for the update. The weather was made possible by Island Style Talent Bath, Battery World Plus, Caribbean Metals, and Beacon Insurance.
Being RCI's weather news. For more information, call the weather hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Free tires, come and get your free tires here. We're giving them away at Island Style Talent Bath.
So are you mad? What do you mean free tires?
Well, madam, for every 100 tires you buy at our regular price at Island Style, we'll give you up to an amazing 25 tires free.
Really?
And to be honest, yeah, we've probably gone a little mad.
Wow, that's a deal. And good timing too. So I can pretty up my house in time for Christmas. And look how nice those tires are.
Free tires, ceramic tires, porcelain tires, all tires, no exception. Visit us at Bella Rosa, Rodney Bay, John Crompton Highway, Castries, and Latoni, View 4. Or call 452-450 or 453-TILE.
Attention. Attention, attention, attention. Introducing Palmer Automotive Batteries, a leading brand in Asia, now in St. Lucia. Palmer Automotive Batteries are now available at Battery World Plus, Rodney Bay and Massad, Shamari's Garage, Blair's Auto and other leading store outlets. Palmer Batteries are of the highest quality and standard with full warranty. Palmer is powered by cutting-edge technology and the leader of the new era. Palmer Brand, the best price batteries on the market. Call us today, 453-7037, 451-2264 or 450-0390.
Caribbean Metals Limited presents Spin to Win Promotion. Spend $500 or more and get a chance to spin to win instant prizes. Spend $2,500 or more and get a chance to spin and enter into the grand prize draw. We have not forgotten our account holders. Pay on your account and get the same chance to win. Promotion runs the first week every month until December. The grand prize, $5,000 cash on December 6, 2019. Like, share, and subscribe to our pages on the various social platforms for more details. Terms and conditions apply. This promotion is approved by the National Lotteries Authority. Caribbean Metals, we've got you covered. Guaranteed.
Get 5 weeks free when you buy home or contents insurance from Beacon. Our insurance is very affordable, and we've got online and mobile services for your convenience. Call us at 458-5860 or log on to beacon.co.tt for a quote today.
And welcome back to the lunchroom. I'm your host, Calix George Jr., and in studio with me, Mr. Marlon Marquis and Ms. Sandra Wattler, and they are from the Caribbean Regional Compliance Association, and they are hosting their 13th annual conference in St. Lucia from the 7th to the 8th. That's tomorrow and Friday, up at the Royalton Resort at Cap Estate Groseley. And this very, very interesting topics, which we will get to at some point indeed. But over 150 participants coming already, I suppose, are coming in today for this event. Pretty large event, no doubt. Tell us, what kind of organizations, companies are these individuals coming from?
We have quite a wide mix, because the beauty about what we do in compliance, it relates to so many different types of industries. So we'll have banking, we'll have law firms, we'll have insurance companies, just a wide range of different financial services, trust companies and service providers as well. So again, a very wide range of people. And I think when they come, and I know the first time I attended a conference which was hosted in BVI, you just felt like, oh, you're coming to somewhere that we all speak the same language. We're going through the same frustrations. And it's something you alluded to earlier. One of the things is when you don't know what to do with something in your organization, it comes to compliance. So added to what Marlon was saying, what we do, it also means anything else. Every day in the morning, the first thing I do is check the news to see what it is. And we have to find ways to combat that, to mitigate those circumstances. So it, from that perspective, it does go to a wide range of people that attend.
Right. Now, if anybody out there wants to call in, of course, and if I have any specific questions for Mrs. Wattler or Mr. Marquis, please feel free to do so. At this time, we're going to be opening up the lines. The number is 452-3046, 452-3046. And there's also WhatsApp, which you can message, or you can also call in, and it's 724-0008. Now, where would you say the Caribbean financial offshore sector stands right now? In terms of how it's viewed by the rest of the world?
That's a very interesting question. At the moment, Caribbean offshore, and I try to get away from the word offshore because there is a negative connotation to it. So the Caribbean financial centers have a sort of negative reputation in the eyes of the international community. And that is not entirely based on reality. It's more based on perception and sensationalism, unfortunately. In my eyes, Caribbean financial sectors are very strong, vibrant, well-regulated, and well-supervised by very strong regulators.
Right. But there's this perception out there. We've heard of things like WikiLeaks, for instance, the Panama Papers, a lot of sensationalism, and this belief in the developed world that these jurisdictions are allowing for the siphoning of money, tax evasion. Do you think there's any basis of reality there, or is it's again unfair targeting just finding the small guy to pick on?
I think it is targeting the small guy, and the small guy continue to be bullied by the bigger guys. Our business, we provide services and products that persons around the world can use for estate planning, for investments in different countries, because we provide a mutual jurisdiction in which persons from various countries can pool investments to then make investments into another country. If I'm to use the example of the BVI, BVI structures are used to invest billions of dollars into Chinese companies, and the dividends are reaped, and the investors, they pay taxes in their country of residence. So the issue, or the sensationalism and the perception that is out there, it's unfounded in my opinion.
Now, currently, each country, each territory pretty much has their own regulator. Do you think in the future we may get to a point where we may begin seeing some regional or sub-regional regulators coming into play? Or do you think that would actually scare away potential players in the market more than anything else?
If I may, one of the objectives of the Caribbean Regional Compliance Association is to ensure that there is a collective, unified voice in the region. And maybe not present, but in the near future, I think it will be beneficial for the region to have, if not one, regulatory body, regulators meeting via an association such as ours, where they can come together, put together various plans of action, and then go out and meet with the international community. Because unfortunately, Calix, at the moment, what we see happening, if you take the EU, for example, the EU as a unified body wishes to negotiate with individual small island nations in the region. How can that be fair? Would you put a two-year-old child in a boxing ring
ironically, when it comes to trade, they actually want to group us all together to make it simpler for them in the case of the EPA. So maybe the Caribbean should insist on a more cohesive approach or policy when it comes to that.
And I think to what Marlon is saying, the fact that we have the international standards set up in the FATF, which was founded by the G7 countries, so of course they have their agenda in setting out those 40 recommendations. Every regulator has to follow those 40 recommendations. So the point is, we may have different industries, but we all have the same 40 recommendations to go through. So whether we come together collectively to help to fight those, as you said, there's power in numbers, even though we may have our differences. And if it is not through a single regulator, maybe through a body such as ours, where we can share ideas and we can then attack the problem together, or with the same, singing from the same song sheet.
Right. Now, a very topical issue, of course, anti-money laundering. It's a worldwide issue. Do you think we are doing enough right now in the region? Is there still a lot to be done? I know you've spoken about some of these task force reviews. How far away are we to actually getting to a point where corruption, or the sentiment of corruption, the perception of corruption, especially in terms of money laundering, can be dealt with?
I think to that question, you hit the nail on the head when you said perception. It's the perception of the onshore, the first world countries, or whatever we want to call them, that the money laundering things are occurring here in the Caribbean, and that's not the case. When you look, as Marlon mentioned, the kind of structures, all the deals, anything we structure and we do within the Caribbean is done through onshore jurisdictions, because what we're doing is helping the East to open up investments to all types of people, for instance, pension funds. So when people retire, that they know they're getting a good return on their money, as opposed to sitting in the bank with, I don't know about you, but in Cayman, it's like 0.01%. That's what we're doing. But people don't realize that. We're dealing with institutional investors. Yes, there's private equity coming in. But again, you know, all of that is also being dealt. It's multi-jurisdictional. And that's the reason they choose the Caribbean or jurisdictions with low tax or no tax, because you're being taxed several times on the same thing. And it allows a U.S. investment company to get in investors from another jurisdiction that pays tax in that jurisdiction, not necessarily also U.S. tax.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the actual conference that's coming up. You're starting tomorrow. And it seems as if you're going to have a very very long list of interesting topics. I don't know if you want to share with us, give us an idea of who are your speakers, where they're coming from maybe, and what they'll be speaking about. Sandra, you want to
Thanks. So we do have very interesting, our focus and our theme this year is It All Starts With You. And we thought it's very important for us as a compliance officer to realize what we can do to help us within our career. So a lot of the topics deal with this. So for instance, we start off with looking with a speaker from the U.S. Treasury Department, interestingly enough, because there's so much work that we do with the U.S. and compliance officers need to be aware the U.S. doesn't regulate us. But we need to know what we have to do, especially when you have correspondent banking relations. We need to be aware of what's happening in the U.S. So we do have a speaker coming in there. We also go into some of the soft skills sides of things. How can you get around some of the issues you're facing at work? So another topic is, it's lonely at my desk. All I do is cry, cry, cry. And I think that was just a really good topic. Just to say, you know, some of the issues we have. How do you relate to your board of directors when you may be seeing things differently? One is all money driven and you're looking at it reputationally. How can you bridge that gap together? And then we also have a topic on human trafficking. And this is really a big issue. And you know, in the news, was it last week in the UK where they found that lorry?
In Essex, yes.
Yeah. You know, and it just breaks your heart to see these things happening. And it's something that happens within the Caribbean as well. Certain jurisdictions we know are... or colleague from Bahamas is that is a big problem they face in the Bahamas, used as a transshipment point.
Right.
So, you know, these are issues that are affecting us as well, not only just globally. And, of course, there's our topic you have there, citizenship by investment. So we do have quite a bit going on. We're looking at anti-bribery and corruption, corporate governance issues, cybercrime. That's a big thing going on now. And going back to what you mentioned about WikiLeaks and... Panama Papers, it's also how do you ensure the information you have is kept secure so you don't have those sort of hacks and breaches. So we're seeing compliance again stretching out into that cybercrime and keeping information safe as well.
Now, I assume you also have, do you have any interaction with central banks as well in terms of persons coming out of central banks being part of your conference, or is it pretty much just simply the commercial banks?
Actually, we have a speaker from the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. She will be presenting as well. And we tend to have someone from a central bank or a quasi-regulatory body besides the ordinary regulatory bodies at all of our conferences, because we want their perspective and we want to share our perspectives with them as well, because that makes for a very beneficial relationship between the regulator and the regulated.
Right. Now, are we facing overregulation in this sector right now? Do you feel that way? Do you feel that it's a bit too much? Is there a point where it becomes too much? How do you strike that balance, really, in terms of... We have people who get very frustrated now, even doing simple transactions with the bank right now. It takes a very long time. You've got to declare source of funds for pretty much anything over a certain amount. Can technology help perhaps in making some of these things a little bit easier for the average person who has to interact with financial institutions?
That's a very good point you made. And you mentioned persons and their experience at the banks. So it shows that compliance or due diligence, money laundering, affects everyone, right? But in terms of technology, in the BVI, we recently enacted legislations that allowed various banks and all the financial services companies to use more technology to do the background checks, to do the authentication of documents, so that it's more it's more efficient and it goes a lot faster. So perhaps that is something St. Lucia can look into as well, because you have a larger population. I'm sure your lines at the bank are even longer than in the BVI, and having technology will make things a lot faster and better for everyone.
And going on to your point, is there going to be overregulation? This is where it is key. If you do have your national associations, one of the things, for instance, and I know Marlon will say the same in BVI, I know in Bahamas when it came out, one of the things is when government is looking to enact legislation, they have us at the table where they're reviewing the legislation, giving feedback. So you're getting it from the industry as well. And the key thing I always say when I go there is, if you want people to be compliant, it has to be easy. You cannot put in 50 million steps to take, because no one will comply with it, right? So we have to make sure we have that balance. And having people in the industry that know the industry to help them, because a lot of times, you know, in any sector, legislation will come out and it defeats the purpose of what it was intended, because a drafter doesn't understand understand that particular industry. So having that association, having that presence helps so much. And I find governments really reach out to the Compliance Association again because there's so many different sectors. It's not a banking sector that you're looking at or insurance. It's all across the board. So they can get a true feedback on how, you know, it is affecting everybody nationally.
And are you seeing that across the region in terms of a good cooperation, a good sense between the legislators? I mean, for instance, just in St. Lucia quite recently, we had a piece of legislation which was coming in to manage the corporate companies under the Companies Act. And it actually got shut down because it was not very well constructed and it seemed way too vague. So it seemed that somebody didn't do their homework. But are you seeing that generally in the region, that the legislators and legal departments are actually understanding the sector and in fact are not overburdening them in any way?
One of the things I see with the FATF 40 recommendations is they do ask, has this gone up for public consultation? So it is something just globally people are looking at to see. It's always a fight. And I know one year we had a session just dealing with that. The regulator who wants the ideas to be put in place, someone from the private sector, and then the legislator, the person doing the legislation. Because it's just that, you know, at the end of the day, we sit down in a working group, we come up with this piece of legislation, and when it's published, it looks different. So, you know, to avoid the frustration, it really is that coming together at the table. So we do see it happening. I do think much more work is needed on it. And, of course, we don't understand how legislators, and because they have specialized training, what it is they need to do. And so we see it from a more practical term. But I think that it's getting better, but there is much more to do.
But it is expensive. I'm gathering compliance right now. I mean, in some of the companies that you're dealing with, could you just maybe give us a sense as to what proportion of the company's expenditure goes into compliance, just meeting the requirements?
Compliance continues to be an expensive part of the operation, but it's a necessary part of the operation. If I may flip around your question, just consider the cost of non-compliance, reputational risk. You may lose your license. You may go out of business. We've seen that happen in the BVI. I'm sure Cayman have cases of that as well. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, if you permit
how
me, I will answer it differently.
How often does it
and
happen?
Say that non-compliance is more expensive than compliance.
How often do you get situations like that in the BVI and Cayman, very mature jurisdictions?
Well, right now, for instance, we are looking at some regulation coming into a sector that didn't need any regulation, and it is causing a lot of chaos because the fear is if this comes in place, is it going to mean that sector will leave and go elsewhere? In Cayman, back in the early 2000s, we did a major overhaul to our legislation. So, like, private trust was something that left our jurisdiction. We saw it go elsewhere, and we more focused on mutual funds. You know, and so now we're stretching out into other things because, again, as each sector gets more and more regulated, it's to try and figure out how easily we can do the work for these clients with minimal. The other thing I wanted to say with compliance, we're always seen as a cost center, right? And we're not bringing in money. But because of how some regulations are, and for instance, it requires all entities to have compliance officers, the law firm I work with, we've gone into where we now provide that service to our clients. And who best to do it but the compliance officer who's been doing it internally. So now we are a profit center, bringing money in, and they're seeing this as another stream that, you know, should another side of business go, we have something new coming in. So for me, it's a wonderful story. You're doing something you love and now being recognized and treated, you know, differently because you are bringing in money.
I noticed some of your participants are coming from credit unions, and that has been a pretty difficult area, generally has not had to face as much regulation as the banking or the financial institutions, but they're now being put under a bit of pressure, from my understanding. Are you seeing that around the region, and do you think that's a good thing, or is it, again, over-regulation?
I think it is a good thing because the credit unions operate like your commercial banks. They are deposit taken. They give out loans as well. Perhaps their thresholds are lower than the commercial banks, but they are operating as banks, and as such, they should be regulated. And I think it's a good thing because if the credit unions continue to be kept away or outside from the purview of the regulator, then that's a risk to your economy. That's a money laundering risk to your economy.
So you believe in a single financial regulator for all forms of financial institutions as the best model to go towards?
It all depends on the size of your financial economy. In the BVI, the financial sector is small in terms of numbers, but in terms of its outreach around the world, it's quite large. We have one regulator, super regulator, you want to call it as, and they are doing a fabulous job. So I think it can work based on the jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. For example, in St. Lucia, I think you can have one such regulator to oversee the entire financial sector. But it all depends on, you know, certain factors that may be different in its jurisdiction.
So, for instance, in Cayman, we've had one super regulator, but now that we have to do what we call DNFPBs, so compliance.
What's that?
Compliance is the world of all abbreviations, designated non-financial and business professional persons. And so what that means, your accountants, your lawyers, you know, as I said, your precious metal dealers. So now we've created these new supervisors for these because, you know, how do you regulate a lawyer as opposed to a financial into a bank? It is different, you know, an accountant. So we're now seeing separate regulators coming up for those specific functions, and we're in the process of creating some of these. So you may see a mix, or you may see everything together under one umbrella, and then with, or the legislation a lot, that is what you're seeing, an omnibus legislation, so everyone knows where to look at, and it's set out in specific sectors to assist.
Digital currencies, good or bad? What do you think? How do you see that panning out for the sector and for management? I think I noticed you have something in there. Virtual currencies.
It is something that we have to deal with. And the younger generation...
You're hearing about massive amounts of money just being lost in Bitcoin, for instance.
Well, massive amounts of money are lost in hard currencies as well. Mm-hmm. It's a new addition to financial services. And as such, there will be growing pains. There are risks that are associated with it as well. But I think that it is the way of the future. It may not be very good now, but perhaps 15 years from now, it will be the thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with compliance. It's constantly changing and looking at how the money can get into to the system. And so it's embracing that and saying, okay, let us look at what the risks are and how do we deal with that. So if we have the appetite to deal with virtual currency or not. So some people where nothing is wrong with that particular industry, they'll say, we just don't want to do it. Or our business is such, we don't need. But some may say, yes, we're fine dealing with that. Because we'll put the sectors in place. We may charge top dollar for it. Whatever it is they're doing, you know, more scanning and screening of what's happening. So it is something that it's one of the things on the FATF 40 recommendations, new technologies, how do you deal with all of these different things coming in? So you always have to be forward thinking, which is part of the challenge with the sector, with compliance, and also the parts that for us all hands at it get excited about, because it's always challenging you, how can we deal with these issues in the conventional means that we have?
My last question regarding, we have a call coming in, so I'm going to take this call first, and then we'll go to my question. Good afternoon, and welcome to the lunchroom. Good afternoon, and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Hi, good afternoon, colleagues, and good afternoon to your guests.
Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm just listening to the discussion there, and we're talking about compliance, but there is something that is emerging slowly but sure in the region, and you don't seem to hear anybody coming up with the idea, and I speak of corruption. Lately, you know, we've been hearing of a lot of corruption in government and in other organizations. We've heard so many times as a result of corruption in these international bodies, they tend to crumble down as a result of corruption. Then you start to get to know a lot of activities, illegal activities concerning corruption in these organizations. But you don't seem to hear any group of persons in the region, you know, at least attempting to set up an organization that would monitor corruption in government and in other institutions. Can you speak to that?
Thanks very much, Connor. Very interesting point. I think I tried to raise it a little early on in terms about who is regulating the regulators, essentially, and the public sector itself seems to be not so well developed in terms of its own compliance structures. I mean, like in the U.S., for instance, you have inspectors general for each department. We sort of do have that, and we're the resourced in most jurisdictions. You care to comment on that at all?
And that's a very interesting and very good point raised by the caller. What I can say as compliance professionals, what we do at our respective firms and what our laws allow for is for something called enhanced due diligence on politicians and persons who are in positions of authority and may have access to public funds. So right off the bat, if you are a politician, you are considered high risk. And you have to go through enhanced due diligence. What does that mean? We'll ask you a lot more questions and will require from you a lot more documents. And you will go through annual monitoring. And it could be once per year or multiple times per year. So that is what we do to ensure that we can have good monitoring of politicians and persons who are in certain positions. In terms of the corruption within the region, I recall last year we had a speaker from Jamaica who he is overseeing he's overseeing corruption and trying to implement legislations in Jamaica to curtail corruption. And we had him as a speaker because we recognize it is an issue within the region as well. And we want to do our part to ensure that corruption is stamped out because it affects the jurisdiction. It affects the economy. It affects the growth of the economy as well as infrastructure, healthcare, education, every part of the country. And we want to do our part as the Caribbean Regional Compliance Association to give voice to those things. But at the moment, we can only do what we can as well as what legislation currently allows for. And just to add very quickly, we are also having at this year's conference a topic called ABC, What Have You Done For Me Lately? And it's about bribery and corruption.
Very interesting indeed. And my last question, in fact, relates somewhat to what he's talking about. And it may not really apply as much to maybe jurisdictions in like the Cayman and the BVI, but in a country like St. Lucia, where real estate matters a lot, fixed assets, ownerships. And we've heard about, for instance, even things like horse racing being used, the ownership of those types of assets for the purpose of money laundering. Do you think that there needs to be a tighter regulation about that, especially in terms of valuation of properties around the world? We've heard a lot of that in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. with problems with banks overvalued properties, and then they're holding assets that are not really worth what they say they are.
I know one of the things is the real estate agents fall under the regulation as well. So they're caught in that DNFPB phrase that I told you. Mm-hmm. So it means they have to be regulated. And we're seeing where the money is coming in. That's right. And the valuation, getting documentation that these are real people investing, if it's a company, drilling down to see who owns the company. And that also touches on corruption as well. The other thing is it's left to the jurisdiction, and I mean, I guess you may say, is it the fox guarding the hen house, to determine where their risks are in each of the jurisdictions. So, for instance, in Cayman, not only do we have it for the real estate agents, but we've now put in legislation for the real estate developers, because development is just booming, and it's like, well, where is that money coming in to create all of that? So, for that particular region, we've just determined this is something that may be of concern to us, but it may not be a concern, let's say, in another jurisdiction. So you do have to look at that. And as you said, if there are things such as the horse racing that may be an issue, to look at it, anything where there could be amounts of cash coming in and easily way to rinse the money.
Right, indeed. Now, we're over time as it is right now, but indeed it has been a very, very interesting conversation. It's a pity we didn't get perhaps it was not as sensational enough for some people out there. But indeed, thank you very much joining us, Mr. Marlon Markey and Mrs. Sandra Wattler. Any part?
Besides hosting the conference here, we are providing a scholarship to a deserving St. Lucian recipient to further his or her professional qualifications in compliance with a U.S. organization called ACAMS. We are also making a donation to a local senior citizens' home.
The Marion Home.
The Marion Home, yep. Yes. We are making a donation because as a regional entity, wherever we host the conference, we want to leave a legacy, a positive legacy. So besides assisting with the Compliance Association here in St. Lucia, giving a scholarship to a deserving St. Lucian recipient, we are also donating.
Wonderful. And definitely, there are 150 persons coming in, so you're helping with the tourism sector as well. And I think giving some very interesting memories. I am sure you'll be climbing the Pitos again and lots of other wonderful experiences that you're going to have right here in St. Lucia.
And I have to say big up to all the taxi drivers. It's really been green.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Mrs. Sandra Wattler and Mr. Marlon Markey, homeboy right here from St. Lucia, for joining us here at the lunchroom. And tomorrow we'll be in studio. We'll be shifting a little bit. I'm actually having a guest, Senator Joachim Henry, and I believe he wants to talk about that whole issue that the opposition has been discussing, horses before hospitals. So my guest tomorrow, Mr. Joachim Henry, Senator Joachim Henry, will be speaking on here in the lunchroom. Thanks very much, listeners. Thanks very much, callers, of course, and those of you who followed us on Facebook Live, on all our various mediums and streams, and of course our regular radio listeners as well. Thank you, and do have yourself a wonderful Wednesday. Of course, if it's Wednesday, it's Letla, so do enjoy that in a little while. I'm your host, Calix George Jr., saying goodbye.